This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Several areas of the Coulee region have been impacted by severe weather in the last month. This week, Governor Scott Walker declared a state of emergency in Eau Claire, Buffalo, and Trempealeau counties, releasing emergency funds to help clean up after severe storms flooded the area in early August. And as these events become more common, community stakeholders are coming together to better prepare communities to respond to severe weather events. Joining us are Dan Schreiner, Trempealeau County's Emergency Management Director, Todd Shea, Warning Coordination Meteorologist from the National Weather Service in La Crosse, and Deb Teske, Emergency Management Associate at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And Dan, we'll start with you. Why did Governor Scott Walker declare a state of emergency in Trempealeau and surrounding counties this week?
To the best of my knowledge, it's because the three counties stated do not have the wherewithal or the funds to deal with the extent of the damage caused by the weather event.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about, the extent of the damage. What were kind of the situation around the flooding? You know, how many inches of rain did you guys receive?
In the first event, it started on August 10th and carried overnight into the 11th, well into the 11th. We had anywhere from 3 inches to 6 inches in a short period of time reported. We also heard rumors of amounts much larger than 6 inches, but none of that was confirmed. However, the results were pretty straightforward. Rising water, creeks, rivers, and streams that could not handle the water. Water over roadways, culverts washed out, a lot of traffic interrupted. And I had not the opportunity to go into Buffalo or Eau Claire counties, but it's my understanding that Buffalo County especially got more rain, shorter period of time, and there was more damage caused. And then, of course, that was followed up in short order by more rainfall and more roads closed and some more culverts washed out. It's my understanding that the governor's declaration will be for roads only, and in our county, that's where the majority of the damage was to the roads, both town and county, well, and state roads.
And so where are you guys right now with cleanup? Where are you in Trempealeau County, and what have you heard from Eau Claire and Buffalo?
Well, as far as roads being reopened, we got most, if not all, of our roads reopened within 24 hours, and most of that was a temporary fix. We will be busy for months to come with permanent repairs to these roadways, resetting culverts, and pavement above the washouts, but within the 24-hour period, we did get all the roads reopened. We cannot stress enough to the public that when they see water over the roadway, they need to turn around. And the saying is, turn around, don't drown, and I can't stress that enough.
Dan, do you have an estimated cost for, how much these repairs are going to cost the county?
Well, our very initial estimates were in the $300,000 to $400,000 range, that has been increased due to following rainfalls within the following week. We had roads closed two times after that initial rainfall, I think the following Wednesday and Thursday nights. So my estimate is somewhere well above $400,000. Of course, that gets it's been my experience, as you start fixing the roads, that price goes up.
Todd, we'll turn to you. I know that your position has definitely been affected by these severe weather events, these floods that we've been seeing in the last couple of weeks. Tell us a little bit about your role at the National Weather Service.
Well, what I do is help coordinate the information that we provide at the National Weather Service with communities, for example, in Trempealeau County, or with counties like Dan's discussing in the neighboring areas. And then, of course, other individual agencies and groups like Mayo Clinic and the media partners and things like that. So when you talk about any extreme event like Dan's describing up in their area, Buffalo, Trempealeau, and even neighboring Eau Claire County, you know, for us, you know, we're not going through the repairs and all of the devastation that they are. But what we try to do is, of course, try to give them as accurate as a forecast as we can, but then provide any aftermath information that might help with the cleanup, with, you know, the work they might have with FEMA or the governors as far as documenting the event. And then, of course, trying to learn from it so that we can do things differently, maybe better, you know, next time. One of the things Dan mentioned is, you know, the idea of turn around, don't drown. You know, after we have these kind of events, and we've had another one, you know, in Northeast Iowa recently, we're continuing to see people drive into high water, where even when they see cars stranded in the water, they still go into the water. And it's that kind of education where it makes my job as warning coordination meteorologist kind of never ending. We still have a lot of work to do. Anytime we have people get themselves in a bad situation or potentially lose a life like we did in Northeast Iowa last week, we have to, you know, continuously think about what we do and what we can do better.
And as you mentioned, there was flooding in Northeast Iowa. Can you, you know, tell us a little bit about the situation that they were faced, you know, over there?
Well, it's a little similar to what happened up in Buffalo, Trempealeau. It was too much rain too quickly, repeat rounds of thunderstorms. And then as that gathers into the river basins, we have in the cases down there, we had record flooding in some of the communities and stuff. So it's a lot of the same type of deal, though. I think both events tended to happen at night. And so especially the next day, people are getting up and they're getting going. They don't think about all this rain that fell overnight, and they just assume that their normal commute path is going to be the same. And people still want to try to move around the counties, and there's a lot of roads washed out and bridges washed out and culverts. And they do whatever they can. We even saw people last week in Northeast Iowa just driving around barricades constantly, you know, and moving barricades so they can get where they want. And so, you know, it's very similar. Well, they're not, no case is similar, but the same type of thing where you had, again, tremendous flooding, lots of property damaged, and the public infrastructure like roads and things like that.
And we also saw flooding events last week in Crawford and Richland counties. Kind of the same story. Do you think, Todd, with too much rain too fast, as you're saying?
Yeah, in fact, that was part of the same weather system that struck Northeast Iowa. So maybe not quite as much rain, but still lots of damage. Mudslides is typically the case in southwest part of the state. And so, you know, again, the time of night, at night, you know, people can't see those dangers. And the one fatality we did have, a 77-year-old gentleman that drove into floodwaters and got swept away, we often wonder if it had been daybreak, because this happened about 4:40 in the morning, and if it had been daylight out there, would it have made a difference? You know, it might have. So it kind of gets back to, you know, Dan brought up the flash flood safety rules, don't, or turn around, don't drown. But also, you got to think about flooding at night and people not being able to recognize that high water. That's another you know, education point that we try to make across.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about how severe weather is impacting the Cooley region and what area communities can do to better prepare for weather emergencies. We're here with Todd Shea, Warning Coordination Meteorologist from the National Weather Service in La Crosse, Dan Schreiner, Trempealeau County's Emergency Management Director, and Deb Teske, Emergency Management Associate at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And Deb, can you explain your role as an emergency management associate at Mayo? You know, why is a healthcare system really interested in this, you know, emergency preparedness?
Emergency preparedness, I think, is not just important for individuals, as it obviously is. Mayo Clinic is very important, thinks that it's very important to look after the needs of the patients. And weather definitely impacts patients, not only as they're coming in and going out, but even when they're here. So whether it be a blizzard where they get stuck here, or whether it be a tornado that blows through, I don't know if you realize this, but Mayo Clinic was actually established based on a tornado event that happened here in Rochester. And the idea for establishing a hospital here in Rochester came from the sisters here that talked with Dr. Mayo about the need for a hospital, and they saw that after a tornado ripped through the city of Rochester. So we take it very seriously, and we want to just make sure that everyone is safe, and that's why we partner with National Weather Service and other people to make sure that we have the right information so we can make the right decisions.
Absolutely. And, you know, Todd, you were talking about how, you know, a lot of this is about education for the community. A lot of that, this is kind of, you know, teaching the community when to pay attention to severe weather. You know, is that job difficult? Do people pay enough attention, I guess, to severe weather?
Well, in my role, I would say no. But I also understand it to a certain degree. A lot of people just want to live their life, you know, day to day. They don't really give weather a thought unless it's impacting them. And even with that said, most people don't think it's going to happen to them. You know, you think about a tornado outbreak, even then, how many houses and how much area is actually being impacted by those tornadoes? It's relatively small. Same thing with the flash flooding. You know, unless you're in one of those drainage areas, you probably weren't that bothered by it, or have a basement flooded. But when it does happen to you, or it happens to a large population center, it can be a big deal. And so, yeah, that's why we try to work with, you know, Deb and Dan and the different agencies out there. We're all kind of involved in that education preparedness type work, and it's never ending. As I mentioned before, it's you'd like to think that you're making a difference, but there's always more that we can try to do. And these days, learning more about social behavior and how people communicate, whether it be through social media, texting, those kind of things, it's also a very changing type of job, because you have to kind of keep up with where society's headed.
And Dan, you know, as you are continuing to recover from the, you know, the flooding in Trempealeau County this month, you know, do you feel like that do you feel like the county was prepared to face an event like this?
We're getting better. Over the course of years, through repetition, we learn what we need to do, what's expected of us. In this particular instance, there was a rapid and very effective response to the flash flooding. We knew that there was a possibility, you know, thanks to the National Weather Service, there was a possibility of heavy rain. It started late evening into early morning, and as Todd said, rains at night. We're not totally aware of it. We started getting some calls of water over the road, made the response. Trempealeau County's 911 dispatch center took quite a few calls, and we know who needs to be called. Those people who are called know what they need to do. They know what equipment, and, you know, in this case, barricades to block the roadways, flashlights, in an effort to alert oncoming motorists. We did respond very well. That was one of the very positive things about the event, was the response. And you know, it's unfortunate that we get a chance to test ourselves so frequently. Seems like the weather patterns seem to be changing somewhat. We do exercise and drill from time to time. We talk about events like this in retrospect, so we go over what we did right and what we did wrong, in an effort to improve our response the next time.
You mentioned you've kind of learned more about how to respond to these situations through repetition. You know, have you guys seen more, you know, more flooding events or other severe, you know, weather events in the past couple of years?
Well, it seems like we've kind of had to do away with the term of 100-year flood or 500-year flood because these events are occurring with alarming frequency. This year we had quite a few heavy rainfalls in a short period of time. I remember 2010 we had 4 significant events. The last one was resulted in a presidential disaster declaration for the West Central area. Trempealeau County was only one of several counties that were included in that. And, you know, as I look back to my childhood, the days of a long, slow, soaking rain seem to be, I don't know if gone is the right word, but I can't remember the last time we had a long, slow, soaking rain. You know, the problem with this area is if the rain falls fast enough, it's going to run downhill and doesn't get a chance to soak in. You know, this year we've had plenty of moisture, and there wasn't much room for additional moisture to soak in anyway, but there was no time for it to do so.
And Todd, do you think that we're seeing, I guess, a greater, you know, an increased frequency of severe weather events?
Well, I don't have that data at my fingertips right here to support that, I guess, but you know, it seems like maybe every decade, every 8 to 10 years, we do see a cycle of active weather kind of shift around the region. You know, I know in Northeast Iowa, they were hit hard in 2008, and some of the rest of the area was hit hard in 2007. We've had some occasional flash flood events like that. You know, the tornado events, on the other hand, have been relatively quiet lately. So I think it kind of has a way of working out, but nonetheless, you know, there does seem to be some increase, and there's certainly more people, more communities at risk sometimes by, you know, the way that communities are built or just urban sprawl, you know, in some areas. And so it's another reason why, you know, this preparedness role between all of us is just something that has to be there and keeps going. We can't prevent the events necessarily from happening, but what we can try to do is make people more prepared and maybe more resilient so that they can withstand a disaster like that.
Yeah, and in what ways do you think our communities may be more susceptible to severe weather events? Are we more greatly impacted by severe weather?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not an engineer, not a civil engineer, but, you know, certainly things like as communities grow, you have a different runoff pattern, different drainage pattern. You have some urban flooding issues. But, you know, we see in other parts of the country where people, you know, people want to build on rivers, they want to build on lake shores, they want to build on seashores. And then when you have things like a major hurricane come in or a major winter storm or those kind of things, there might have been reasons in the past why building in those areas wasn't really favorable, and yet people just kind of keep rebuilding, and then you can get all the way down to just building standards and not building structures maybe as sound as we used to, those kind of things. So again, it's not an easy process. All of that costs money. There's certainly commerce involved, but you try to work with communities and groups to, again, to kind of make things as resilient as you can. If we're going to do these kind of things, how can we withstand a flood? You know, if we're going to put a park in, or we have a floodplain area, if we made that into a park, we could handle the flood and with minimal costs and impact, those kind of things. And so I think a lot of communities are looking at those kind of ideas.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about how severe weather is impacting the Cooley region and what area communities can do to better prepare for weather emergencies. We're here with Todd Shea, Warning Coordination Meteorologist from the National Weather Service in La Crosse, Dan Schreiner, Trempealeau County's Emergency Management Director, and Deb Teske, Emergency Management Associate at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. I know that the National Weather Service has created a program called Weather Ready Nation to kind of help communities better prepare for severe weather events. Todd, can you talk a little bit about what this initiative is?
Sure. It's a kind of an open-worded, kind of an open-themed idea, but it's called a Weather Ready Nation, and it's, again, it kind of gets back to what I've been mentioning about trying to get communities more resilient to, you know, the apparent, if you will say, increase in major disasters and major events. So it's getting people more educated on the information that's out there. You know, I suppose it gets into building practices and things like that, but it's kind of working together in the meteorological communities, the weather communities, between the media, between emergency management officials and the National Weather Service in trying to get everyone to be more resilient and to be more responsive and be able to respond to severe weather. So we have this program. It doesn't have necessarily a finishing line, but it's just kind of a goal. And we work with you know, our close partners like those in emergency management to just kind of be one of the workers, if you will, or the people that have their boots on the ground and trying to make a difference in working with communities.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, why is an initiative like this particularly important in our region, in the Cooley region?
Well, I think it plays into effect everywhere. But we have certainly our share of weather concerns. I think like a lot of regions, you know, we have, you can go into southeast Minnesota, you can have where you have more open land, you have worse winter conditions, and you have the terrain in western Wisconsin here in the neighboring states where you can have tremendous flash flooding as we've seen. You know, we do get tornadoes, we get our fair share of hailstorms and all kinds of things. So we get the variety of weather that the upper Midwest typically has to deal with and different concerns and different challenges in each area. So there's a lot of different things that this kind of initiative, the Weather Ready Nation initiative, can help and work with throughout the region.
And Deb, I know that Mayo is kind of a partner on this initiative in our area. You know, why did Mayo want to get involved?
One of the important things when we were making that decision is the fact that we need to be, this is not Mayo on its own, this is not, you know, a county on its own, it's not National Weather Service on its own, it's not individuals on their own. We all have to work together, and if we don't work together, then with a consistent message, then the message is going to get lost. So, you know, we believe that it's very important that people individually are prepared for bad weather, that they know where to get the information from, that they know what to do in case of bad weather, because one of the things that for us, for example, staffing is very important. If we don't have staff here, then we can't do our mission. So we need to have our individuals know what's going on, and obviously National Weather Service or different counties, they have a big part to play in making sure that the right message gets to our people. And then, of course, we as Mayo Clinic need to know how to respond. We need good information. We need to make sure all our plans respond appropriately to the various conditions that there may be out there, and that requires getting experts to be able to give us the right information and so that we can build our plans appropriately.
Mayo has an interesting position, or healthcare systems in general have an interesting position in that, you know, you guys are part of the response to severe weather emergencies, and yet you could also be impacted by the emergency itself. So, you know, what kind of internal planning goes on to make sure that, you know, you guys are ready to respond?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Yes, we do a lot of planning. We create our plans. But more than that, we do training for our staff so that they know how to respond appropriately. We have annual training for our staff on our emergency preparedness plans. But even more importantly, we do exercises. And what that means for us is that we create a scenario, say, you know, there's a tornado coming our way, what are you going to do? Or there are obviously a number of other things that we could do, but We do partner with the National Weather Service on their Tornado Awareness Day in April every year, and we encourage all of our work areas to exercise their tornado plans. So, you know, move people away from windows and things like that. Although we don't actually have them move patients, we just have them simulate moving patients. We don't want to cause any additional harm to come to anybody just because we're practicing what would happen in case of a disaster. But all those things go into play when we're trying to make sure that everyone is prepared. You want to have a plan, then you want to make sure people know about the plan, and then you want to exercise that plan, actually go through it. And we encourage our individuals, our staff members, to do that at home as well, because we want them not, if they're here at work, we want them to know that their family knows how to respond at home so they aren't worried about what's happening at their house. They know that their family knows how to respond, and they can actually focus on their work and take care of the people who may have not planned ahead of time and are now coming in and are injured.
And Dan, you know, as emergency management director in Trumbull County, you know, why is it important for you to, you know, have these partnerships across many different stakeholders?
I look at myself as a conduit, as someone who helps facilitate the response. What I can't do, I can certainly put people in touch with other entities, other departments, and a large part of my role is to facilitate and encourage departments to practice response, to practice the steps that are needed in recovery, to touch base with those entities and departments outside of the immediate area so that you know where to turn in an
Dan Schreiner, Trumbull County's Emergency Management Director, is here with us today to talk about recent flooding events throughout the Cooley region and a new initiative to help communities prepare for future severe weather. Also joining us is Todd Shea, Warning Coordination Meteorologist from the National Weather Service in La Crosse, and Deb Teske, Emergency Management Associate at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on potential impacts of the Weather Ready Nation initiative. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about a new initiative by the National Weather Service to prepare communities for severe weather emergencies. Severe storms and flash floods have impacted several communities in the Cooley region this month, prompting Governor Walker to declare a state of emergency in Eau Claire, Buffalo, and Trumbull counties. With these emergencies becoming more common, weather experts, healthcare officials, and community leaders want to make sure the Cooley region is weather ready. Joining us to talk about the Weather Ready Nation initiative are Dan Schreiner, Trumbull County's Emergency Management Director, Todd Shea, Warning Coordination Meteorologist from the National Weather Service in La Crosse, and Deb Teske, Emergency Management Associate at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. And Todd, I know that, you know, part of the Weather Ready initiative from the National Weather Service is making sure that, you know, severe weather warnings are accurate and kind of working towards greater accuracy. You know, why is that important, you know, both for emergency management officials, but also for just regular people?
Well, I think obviously a more accurate forecast is maybe has the potential to save more lives. It's an easier, or I would say a more effective tool for decision makers. For example, if we were able to tell someone like Dan up at Trumbull County that you are going to have 6 to 8 inches of rain, and it's going to fall in these exact river basins. And they had confidence in that. You know, maybe there could have been something done to help prepare people for that. Unfortunately, that type of accuracy is not quite there yet. We sometimes can tell big picture items, like we know we're going to have a band of heavy rain somewhere in the region, but it's getting those exact details yet that still kind of eludes us. And so obviously one of our goals is to get this material that we the forecast information out there as accurate as we can, but knowing there's always going to be some room for error and just the overall science of it, we try to give people some ideas on what alternate forecasts could be, what some of the alternative, you know, if we did end up with this amount of rain, what this could happen, if we end up with a low amount than this. And so we just kind of try to communicate what our thoughts are going into an event like that.
And Dan, you know, from your perspective, how could more specific details, you know, from some of these severe weather forecasts be helpful?
The earlier we get the information, the better. That's part of the whole process is preparedness. But I need to remind everyone, you know, where we were just 5 to 10 years ago. We kind of had to wait to get this information. Way technology has been progressing. The other morning, I'm at a location where there's water going over the road, helping to prevent people from driving through it, and two of the people with me and myself were getting alerts on our smartphones talking and giving us information about whether that was impending. You know, that tells us whether the water is going to go up or the water is going to go down, depending on the predictions on how much rain we're going to get. You know, there was a time when that possibility was unheard of. It's we live in a technology-wise, an excellent time to be dealing with this type of an event.
You know, Todd, from your perspective, how has technology changed the way the National Weather Service, you know, is able to get this information to the public?
Boy, it would take me a while to come up with the entire list of how things have changed. I've been in this business for 28 years or so, and it has changed dramatically. I think, you know, not only is the science getting better because of computer modeling and able to just crunch more numbers, just amazingly more information, but there is a lot more work with partner groups like we're talking about today in with positions like myself. So there's more community involvement taking place. And then the third step there is just the communication aspects. I think Dan hit on that as well. The rate at which information flows these days and gets out there, and that works both ways, both to and from us, you know, at least us at the National Weather Service, has made things a lot different. And in a lot of ways better, because, you know, it's a challenge because there are a lot of different ways we need to communicate, but it does allow us to hit a big population quicker than maybe we used to. Maybe, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we had to wait for someone to go on air on the television or make sure the weather radio is going off. Well, these days we still have that, but we have, you know, ways that we can send out a tweet or instantly text message people and those kind of devices just hopefully give people a lot more heads up. One of the more frustrating things, I think, in my line of work is when a big impactful weather event is predicted fairly well, and to still hear people say they didn't know what was coming or they had no warning. You know, you hear those phrases quite a bit. And in some cases, I think that's valid, but in others where it was well predicted, sometimes it just comes down to some personal responsibility and taking advantage of all this technology that is out there. You know, we can do what we can in emergency management and the National Weather Service and maybe through the media, but we need the public to use it and take advantage of how many ways they can stay informed these days.
Do you think that in some ways, because we are maybe receiving more warning when a severe weather event is going to happen? Do you think that it's made people pay less attention to when those warnings come across? You know, I think back to, the major tornado event that happened in Joplin, Missouri. You know, that they knew that tornado was coming, but a lot of people didn't pay attention to those warnings because of how many tornado warnings happen in that area. You know, how often do you think that might come into play?
Well, I think it's a factor. We definitely want to keep our false alarms down as much as we can. But there's also a lot of research out there that I've looked at that says that's really not as big a problem as you might think. It may have been in certain communities, but I think the amount of information is still effective, and people may not act, or they might not be educated in knowing what to do under certain circumstances, but they're aware of it and they at least look into it more. They try to seek out some other verification that it is out there, and then the next step is that they try to figure out if it's going to impact them. And so the information helps with that kind of thing. It's just, again, trying to get accurate information and then keep people educated on what to do once that threat is verified.
And Dan, you know, how much warning did Trempealeau County have before some of these flash flood events?
Well, like I said earlier, we were aware of the fact that heavy rain was expected. In the case of a flash flood, there is not a lot we can do in advance. There are some municipal impoundments, dams, if you will, where we can alert the operators of those facilities to make sure they're aware of and ready to respond to rising water, because you don't want the municipality impacted by water coming up too fast. They can release water. We're getting better at notifying people downstream that water is being released at a certain dam so that the downstream municipalities can deal with the increased flow. But as we go through these events, we had a significant event on Labor Day of 2015 and then several times in the last week and a half. So the players know their roles. We're also getting used to documenting what we need to keep track of for the recovery aspect of an event like this as well.
And Todd, you know, for severe weather events, you know, how much warning do you try to give communities? We're talking about the ways that warning might be coming out, but in terms of hours, minutes, how much warning do you try to give people?
Well, it comes back down to that whole issue of false alarm versus, does it actually occur? And so there is kind of a spot there somewhere in between where we try to give people as much advance notice as we can. But you also have to realize that where's the state of the science? And if it happens to be one of those types of weather events, and I'd use the one that hit Buffalo and Trempealeau counties a couple weeks ago as an example, I don't think that was an overly easy one to predict. The confidence, at least on our end, wasn't super high. And so, while Dan has been gracious in his comments here, I think in hindsight we wish we could have got more information out there quicker and realized the impact of it, I think. So we're always striving to do better with those regards, but you don't want to tell people 4, 5, 6 days out that they're going to get hit with a heavy rain event just to have all of the weather systems to change. So I think things like winter storms, we're getting at least increasingly better at 2, 3, 4 days out. And when you're talking about thunderstorm-related activities like tornadoes, flash flooding, then you're more on the range of hours, And with flooding, sometimes maybe 12, 18 hours at best. But again, sometimes it almost pays to wait a little bit until the certainty's there. And so it is that kind of a scale of weighing that.
That's Todd Shea, warning coordination meteorologist from the National Weather Service in La Crosse, here with us today to talk about the Weather Ready Nation initiative and how it's helping communities in our region. Also joining our conversation is Dan Schreiner, Trumbull County's Emergency Management Director, and Deb Teske, Emergency Management Associate at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And we've been talking a lot about, you know, the severe weather that we've been having this summer. But, you know, Todd, you bring up a good point. We also deal with severe weather in the wintertime. You know, Deb, how does that kind of change the way that people need to be preparing for these, you know, severe weather events in the winter?
Well, I think that, you know, here in the upper Midwest, we feel like we have a good handle on severe winter weather, which, you know, in most cases we do, but when we're talking blizzards and things like that that don't occur as often, I think it's very important for us to know ahead of time what we're doing. And, you know, when it comes summer, if it's a severe weather event, you're talking, you only have to prepare maybe an hour ahead of time, but the winter events, you have to probably prepare longer ahead of time because you're talking about longer term events that will impact you. You know, you may not be able to get out of your house for a couple of days, or you may be, you don't want to be stranded by the side of a road in the middle of a blizzard. That would be very bad. So you have to plan a lot of transportation at a time. For Mayo Clinic, one of the things that we have to look at very carefully when it comes to winter storms is staffing. You know, we need to make sure that we can get staff here, or if there's a chance that staff would not be able to make it in, you know, we rely on National Weather Service to give us enough advance warning so that we can maybe have staff stay over, you know, come in early or plan to stay in a hotel overnight so that they can be there in the morning. So all those planning considerations go into winter storms.
And Dan, you know, how does that change your job when you're planning for, you know, severe weather in the wintertime?
Well, you know, I'm fortunate. I live a block away from work, so there have been times when I couldn't drive to work, so I just walked. But it's all a matter of, as Todd said, winter seems to be easier at getting ready, making sure the highway department is aware of what's coming, and they get everything ready to go. In my experience, the winter weather events I'd much rather deal with than flash flooding or severe weather in thunderstorms or tornadoes.
And why is that?
Because of the increased accuracy in predictions, and you know, people seem to, after the, you know, the public in a winter weather event seem to adjust pretty well over once they get past the initial first winter driving experience thing, where people seem to forget how to drive in snow over time. But, you know, because we live in Wisconsin and we're used to dealing with snow, we maybe don't suffer the same long-term effects that maybe areas to our south experience, you know, areas that aren't geared up for snowfall and snow removal.
And Todd, you know, we're talking about flash flooding and severe thunderstorms and, you know, even snowstorms or ice storms. You know, what other severe events do people need to be aware that happen in our area?
Well, there's two that come to mind that don't get as much attention that maybe we should hit on. First of all is lightning. I think nationally during this week, we're up to about 32 fatalities across the United States with just lightning. And, you know, lightning is something that's out there with every thunderstorm, even if we don't have warnings on it. So it's something people don't think about. They just keep doing their outdoor activities and not give it a thought. And that's where we have issues. You know, there was in Trumbull County, it's been a few years now, maybe 5-6 years, but there was a person out surveying land in the fall with a thunderstorm that came through and struck and killed them. But you know, it just being on the beach, being under a tree, gardening, those kind of things, outdoor activities that people just, I guess, don't think about, and they end up getting themselves injured or, worst case scenario, killed. And the other weather item that comes to mind is fog. Again, not something that people think about. And in the La Crosse area here in the Coulee region, we end up with a lot of that valley fog in the fall months that just kind of burns off and doesn't cause people too much trouble. But there are those days when everyone is socked in with fog and it's very low visibility. And believe it or not, we've had, you know, every year or so we end up with a fatality from a car accident or, you know, people colliding at an intersection or something like that from fog. And so we've trying to do a little more at our office with regards to fog, maybe not pushing the preparedness as much, but the forecasting aspect and trying to make sure people know that that danger is out there.
Say, Hope?
Yeah, Dan?
If I could add to what Todd's saying, and I think we're getting a lot better about this in the recent past, is our attention to heat. Heat weather events kill more people than all the other events combined, and we are now starting. I know we have an effort underway to have cooling centers throughout the county, and I think that's fairly widespread. It's something that we never really paid enough attention to, is the the very young and the very old are susceptible. Those people who don't have air conditioning, and it puts them at a disadvantage.
Absolutely. And so, Todd, you know, in as we've been talking about this this Weather Ready Nation initiative that from the National Weather Service, you know, what do you hope in the next 5-10 years that this initiative might, what changes might it bring about?
Well, there'd be a lot to list, but you know, one of the things of working with partners like Dan and Deb here as ambassadors, if you will, to this program is kind of helping us promote weather safety, you know, coming up with ideas, sharing it with the group. And, you know, we work together with emergency management, business partners, and the media as kind of a group. And that group just kind of continues to grow as more people get on board. So it's supplying these ambassadors, these partners with the tools so they can help promote safety amongst themselves. It's kind of like a chain process where you have, you just kind of keep building the network, and then you supply that network with information, and it just kind of has a way of fanning out. It's a hard thing to verify, and or we would say to meter, to see how the results come out, but we hope that it makes a difference. We hope it ends up saving lives and again, making communities more resilient to a disaster so they can bounce back and get their commerce going and you know, and getting people to rebuild, those kind of things. And we've seen it in some communities around the region, especially when it comes to flooding.
And Deb, you know, from Mayo's perspective, as you you know, participate in this initiative, you know, what changes or improvements that are you guys hoping to make by forming these partnerships?
Well, I think that as I mentioned before, I think that having a consistent message is very, very important, so that everyone says the same thing. But I think having us work together, we can help, because it comes down to the individual. And oftentimes, even if it's a business or a county or whatever, it's the individuals that need to respond and respond appropriately. So if we all work together, then we can give the tools that individuals need to have the right information at the right time to make the right decision. And I think that's what we hope to do, to have a consistent message so that individuals can be safe.
And Dan, as you begin to, you know, reflect back on what's been happening with recent flooding events in Trempealeau County, you know, how do you hope that increasing these conversations between, you know, the National Weather Service, Mayo, other partners can help improve your job?
Well, and I have seen it in the 9 or 10 years I've been emergency management director. we communicate more, we communicate quicker, we practice, we have drills, and we seem to be retaining it. We seem to be practicing it for real on a more frequent basis. So we are improving every time we do that. And that's the important part, I think.
We've been talking with Dan Schreiner, Trempealeau County's Emergency Management Director, Todd Shea, Warning Coordination Meteorologist from the National Weather Service in La Crosse, and Deb Teske, Emergency Management Associate at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, about how regional communities are coming together to prepare for severe weather emergencies. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and John Davis is our senior news editor and producer. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.